And Amy, can I turn things over to you?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Heidi. Thank you, everyone, for attending today's cyber seminar, which is really focused on the mechanics of the new RFAs and submission processes. I first want to thank Chris Bever, who is now our deputy to the Deputy Creative for ISRM, who has really been the key leader in the transformation of the portfolios and the RFA process that you'll be hearing about later today. I'm currently the acting deputy creative for ISRM, Investigator Scientific Review and Management. I'm joined today, and really the main focus here is to hear from our esteemed panel of experts in this area, led by Mike Burgio, who is our director of ISRM operations. And in addition, we have Christy Benton-Glover and Tiffin Ross Shepherd also joining. This trio has been an absolutely fantastic resource for all of us to really get these new processes implemented. So I want to thank the three of them again. And Mike, I'll at this point turn it over to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for that great introduction, Amy. So what I'm going to do is I have a very short slideshow where I'm going to go over the new process for applying for research funding through ISRM. I expect that it'll be like 10, 15 minutes max, and then we're going to open it up for questions for me, Christy, and Tiffin. So I'll just start right away. So next slide, please. All right, so under the services, under the old paradigm, each service published their own RFAs. And they also had their own pre-authorization requirements. So HSRD had an ITS through ART, RRD required pre-applications for all RFAs, and BLRD and CSRD required LOIs for some RFAs, but not others. These RFA documents also really had two purposes. One, they defined the research topic that the service was interested in supporting. And they also determined like the details of the award, budget duration, review criteria, requirements, etc. Now, one of the things that we want to do in this reorganization is to harmonize a lot of the processes between the portfolios. So next slide, please. So, under the portfolio system, we have kind of split off the topic solicitation, like what research topics we're interested in, along with the requirements of the award. So under the portfolios, we have RFAs, but all RFAs are cross-portfolio, meaning they define the award type, budget duration, review criteria, etc., but they do not define the specific research topics that we are interested in. Instead, the broad portfolios, actively managed portfolios, and programs all publish their notices of special interest, or called NOCIs. These NOCIs define the research topic that we're interested in. So we have a NOCI on TBI, we have a NOCI on brain behavioral mental health, etc. So they're telling you, well, these are the research areas we're interested in. Those NOCI documents also point to, they list the RFAs that can be applied to through that NOCI. So as an example, some NOCIs you can apply to almost all of the RFAs types. Other NOCIs, though, are more defined. They might say that we're only interested in merit review awards and clinical trials for these research topics, and we're not interested in supporting a career development award, for example. So when you're looking at these NOCIs, you also want to be looking at, well, what are the RFAs that are available through that NOCI? And then finally, the scientific review groups, the SRGs, they have not changed. So if you have an investigator who's used to applying to HSR2 or CAR-A or RRDT1, those review groups, they still convene. They convene on the same schedule, and their purviews have largely not changed. We have published updated purview statements for the SRG and combined them into a single document with some minor tweaks. And those tweaks are usually just to sort of help you determine when we have two different SRGs that have similar or somewhat overlapping purviews, which one might be the most appropriate. Next slide, please. So, when you're submitting an ISRM application, there's a number of decisions that you have to make. So the first one is, which NOCI should you apply through? And this is really like identifying the research topic and then aligning that to the topics that are available in the suite of gnoses that we have. One thing I do want to note here is that some gnoses are cross-portfolio. For example, the Women's Health gnosis. So when you apply to the Women's Health gnosis, you will also have to determine, well, which portfolio is appropriate for my research topic. Then you're going to have to decide, well, what research type or what project type or award are you interested in for your project? Is it a mentored award? Is it an independent award? Is it a clinical trial, etc.? And you have to make sure that that gnosis supports that type of award. Now, as I've said before, a lot of times the AMP gnosis and the program gnosis are limited into what types of awards they're supporting. So if you're, for example, looking at an AMP and it doesn't support the type of award that you're interested in, you probably want to look at one of the broad portfolio gnosis and see if that project topic fits there. The broad portfolios have broad purviews in their research, and most research areas that are relevant to veterans should have a home in one of the broad portfolios. When you submit your pre-application, you're going to be asked these questions: which NOSI, which RFA, which SRG you think that your research proposal belongs in. Now, the SRG is perhaps the most important decision you're going to make. That's where it's going to be reviewed. That's where you want to make sure that the purview of the review group has the purview of your topic area, so that it gets the appropriate level of expertise for review. The other thing to be aware of is that also defines the cycles in which you can apply. So the when our SRGs convene has not changed. So, you know, some of them convene in the winter summer cycles, others convene in the spring and the fall. And that's something you want to pay attention to, because that affects the timing of your due dates and when you can apply. There are a small number of SRGs that don't follow this winter, summer, or spring, fall paradigm, but you're going to see them in that SRG purview document. And then finally, even though we ask you, like, which NOSI, which portfolio, which SRG you think your application belongs to, ORD does make the final decisions on all purview questions. And so if you do submit a pre-application and we feel that one of those choices was not the most appropriate for your project, we will give you that feedback in the pre-app approval notification. So as an example, if you chose the TBI NOSI and portfolio to apply to, but we actually thought that no, there isn't enough of focus on TBI. We would like, when you come in and submit your full application, we may direct you to submit your full application to the BBMH NOSI, as an example. Next slide, please. So here we just have a graphic that kind of shows, you know, what I've talked about in the previous slide, and it sort of sets up a visual process for, you know, applying for ISRM funding under this new portfolio-based paradigm. And so, you know, as I said, like, identify your research topic, find the relevant NOSI, select the RFA that's listed in that NOSI, identify the SRG where you would like that application to be reviewed, then submit the pre-application, and then submit the full application. And as I said, during the pre-application process, we are going to be looking at things like purviews, and we're going to be giving you feedback if we feel that your choices were not the most appropriate. So next slide. So there's just a few reminders and updates that I want to just give the group while you're here. One, that we are in the process of revising all of our NOSIs and RFAs for the spring 2025 round. We anticipate that these will be published in early January. So when you're submitting your February 1 pre-applications, make sure that you're going to be using the most recent NOSI and RFA documents. We will be highlighting the changes that we've made in the NOSIs and RFAs. The vast majority of changes are just clarifying our language, but there are going to be some changes in our policy. In this winter 2025 round, but the due date is tomorrow, I also just want to make people aware that when you're resubmitting or renewing applications that had been reviewed and funded under the and or funded under the old service system BXCX HXRX. We are going to be updating those numbers to an RD code. So when you submit things in the fall, don't be alarmed if you start getting some notifications from ERA saying that your grant number has been updated. Please remember that different RFAs do have different pre-application deadlines. So most of our pre-applications are due approximately 6 weeks before the due date on the first of the month before the full application due date. However, clinical trials, CDA, RCS, and translational study awards are actually 3 months earlier than that. So keep in mind that you're on kind of like two different due date systems when you are, depending on the RFA you are applying to, and that RFA document will define when all of the due dates are for that particular RFA. And then just finally, a reminder that all applications, including resubmissions where you had a previously approved LOI, do require a pre-application. So pre-applications are required for everyone. All right, and then my next slide is just a request for questions. So I think I'll end it there and then we can open up the Q&A.
Okay, Rob, can you take down those slides? And I'm going to move everyone to the stage.
So, Heidi, there are some questions in the chat. Are you going to be feeding them to the panel, or should one of us do that?
I can feed them to the panel.
Thank you.
Is there a mechanism for sending RFA change clarification suggestions, especially for those of us who just worked through the nitty-gritty of this first submission cycle?
Yeah, so we are getting feedback from a lot of different sources about the RFAs and where they need to be clarified. So my suggestion would be if you identify clear errors or if you have suggestions about how we can update the RFAs to make them more clear, please send those to the ISRM review mailbox, and then we will catalog them. And basically we bundle changes together. And then the idea is we try to put out updates about every quarter where we take in all of that feedback and then try to put that into the next version of the RFA.
Great, thank you. There is a limit for a PDPI to submit one application per RFA. Is this for a new application only, or can a PDPI submit a resubmission and a new submission in the same RFA in the same review cycle?
So it is one application per RFA, and that includes renewals and resubmissions. So if you have a PEI who needs to submit to the same RFA in the same cycle, they're going to need to seek a waiver.
Thank you. The next question here, will these deadlines be posted on the main VA research website currently listing the various VA PAs and RFAs?
So the NOC and RFA documents are on our intranet site, and I think the due dates are going to be within the RFA documents themselves and the pre-application and full application RFAs. At this point, we're not planning to publish those on any other website that I'm aware of. I don't know, Tiffin or Christy, do you have a?
No, I'm not aware of us posting it anywhere else at this point.
Yeah.
But I would say we do have it disseminated in last week's cyber seminar. We have 4 slides that go into detail about each of the deadlines. And those slides are definitely very handy and you can reference them going forward. So you can have that. If you want that information more at your fingertips, look at last week's presentation, which covered the main content, the high level content, including those deadlines.
Yeah, I will say, this was something that we did not catch, that we did not include RCS on those slides where it should have been included. So the RCS is lumped in with the CDAs and the clinical trials, and that it needs the 3-month head start for pre-application, not the 6-week.
I'm just going to jump out there and say, Mike, I'm wondering, we might be able to pull like just the calendar out and put it as a link on the intranet. So someone, instead of having to go to the RFAs, they could just click and it's a calendar and it has the schedule. But is that currently there?
Let's look into seeing how we can make that easier to access on the site. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question here. If we submitted a clinical trial, will we have reviewer comments and know if it needs to be resubmitted by the time the pre-application is due?
Yeah, I understand that this seems rather insane to the field, but no, you'll have to submit your pre-application before you get the results of your review. That is awkward, and we are trying to figure out how we can address our internal needs with still accommodating that. And there are some IT issues involved with that as well that limit what we're able to do.
Yeah. I would say too, this is the same issue. I know at least for submission and resubmission as well, this is the same issue we face at NIH. We have 4 times a year we submit, NIH uses 3 times a year, and it's almost impossible to late, for example, submit. If you submit in October, to have everything turned around by February, you always have to wait till the next cycle, which is June. That's an NIH. And the same goes here. I mean, it's a lot of it is the limitations of ERA Commons, plus the fact that we also have want to make sure we keep our workload to a sane level here in central office too.
Yeah, and one of the ideas is that with for those, the career development and the clinical trial awards, we did not have enough time internally to get those back to you on a 6-week lead time. That's just, they just require a higher level of review and engagement.
Great, thank you. For the audience, we do have a lot of time for questions here. Please, if you have questions, get those submitted in that Q&A screen. I'm just going through them as they come in here. Next question here. For a PI that applied to a BLRD grant in fall 2024 and needs to resubmit in spring 2025, how do we maintain the grant series submission number since there will be a new RD series name?
So you will submit using the federal ID, using the BX identifier, right? As if you would normally have done under the previous services. After submission, we will be updating that grant number to RD. And if we do it right, it will have you will have a new grant number, but that grant folder will still include all the previous submissions, the previous summary statements, et cetera. So the number will change to represent the new funding source, but you know, the it should not impact the review of the application in any way that you know wouldn't have been. It would be treated the same way as a renewal or a resubmission was previously.
Thank you. The next question here. When the new RFAs come out in January and the pre-app is due in February, when is the full application due?
So that will depend on the RFA. Right, for the merit review awards and for those RFAs that have the 6-week advance deadline, the due date would be March 10 for the spring round. Now for clinical trials, career development awards, translational studies, and RCS, the February 1 pre-applications would be for the summer round, which would be off the top of my head, I'm sorry, you did tip in her, Christy.
June.
That's May?
June.
June 10, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question here. For BMH, can station submit a new application by a PhD scientist and another resubmission by another PhD scientist? Which means one station will submit 2 applications for BMH.
Yeah, the eligibility limits for non-clinician investigators is not based on the application. So once you get the NCI eligibility approval, that does not count against the limit. So you can have as many PhDs as you have eligibility for applying in a given round. The limitation is how many new eligibility pre-authorizations can you get in a single round? And that is two, right? And that's based on the Schedule A and the Schedule B, as posted, you know, forms, as posted on our internet site. So, you know, the eligibility, it only limits how many people can get eligibility. It doesn't limit how many NCI eligible applicants can apply, if that makes sense. I hope I understand that, like, that's a little bit complicated, but.
We'll see if we get a clarifying question.
Okay,
next question here. Are percentile calculations still being done as in the past, and are there exceptions?
So if you're used to your review panel being percentiled, it will continue to be percentiled. If you're not used to your review panel being percentiled, it will not be, at least for the near future. Now, at a future date, we may decide to percentile all panels. We may decide to percentile none, but for the immediate future, that will not change.
Great, thank you. The next question that I have here, if we have an application pending from one cycle of review, having not yet received feedback or comments, are we blocked from putting in a pre-submission application for the next cycle?
No, in fact, we encourage you to. If you intend to resubmit, assuming that you are not funded, you should be submitting that pre-application as a just in case.
Great, thank you. This hasn't happened on one of these sessions. That is all of the questions that I have right now. For the audience, if you have more questions, we have a ton of time. And you guys have had fantastic questions over all of these sessions. If there are questions out there, please, this is a great opportunity to get them in so we can have a discussion about what you all are curious or wondering about.
I'm wondering, with tomorrow's due date, if there are a lot of people working on submitting their applications today instead of being on this.
Instead of being here asking questions.
Yeah.
I gotta, thank you to everyone for constantly answering questions. And yes, we are working on applications. Okay, the next question here. Does the new rules for the number of PhDs allowed to submit per site apply to previously existing PhDs or just new one?
Okay, so every station who wants has a stable of non-clinician investigators who are eligible to apply to MedHealth or BBMH. Now, if they already had eligibility to apply to BLR&D, they're still eligible until that eligibility would have expired, right? So the limit is on how many people you could submit to be newly eligible. It's essentially like how many, the limit of the two per round per station is based on new investigators, not existing ones.
Okay, everyone, the slides are available for download. I just got the email that they are ready. I just put the link out in the Q&A. You would need to right click on that link to copy and paste it. But I know we're getting some questions. People are wanting to see the sequence of submissions. So you can grab that link right there to get that sequence of submissions. Okay, next question. How will the funding be determined across portfolios?
I don't know, Amy, do you want to field that one?
Yeah, I think it's the portfolios were really just, especially the actively managed portfolios, were designed to focus on congressional and national priorities of VA and veteran groups. The broad portfolios were designed to advance the science in areas that could include those top priorities as well as emerging priorities as well. The way that the funding portfolios, the funding amounts for each portfolio is being established is based on what our current overall budget will be for research and for investigator-initiated research, and also what their current distribution that's been recommended by Congress and by VA leaders in terms of how much we want to invest in certain areas. One of the things to keep in mind is that you might have a proposal that hits on more than one priority area, and that's fantastic. And so in those situations, we want to see those opportunities where we can, for example, address areas of high veteran need versus areas of methodological development. Those are win-win situations. So one thing to think about in terms of the way of how to maybe think about the portfolios is you are no longer sort of wedded to a particular portfolio or just focused on a particular portfolio. I think for several years, if not decades, we've had these four services that have really cultivated certain parts of the translation pipeline. In the transformation, you are basically potentially accessing more than one particular portfolio. You could basically, for theory, be competitive to be funded by more than one portfolio. And that's exactly what we want to see, that interdisciplinary nature of work and that work that cuts across more than one interest. So for example, if you're doing something in health services research, for example, it might have wide appeal for other portfolio topics such as TBI or suicide prevention, pain or military exposure. So keep that in mind. You're no longer essentially required to only apply for one service. Now you can apply and you can potentially be considered for more than one portfolio.
Great, thank you. The next question here, what is the non-clinician process for CDAs when applying for a merit?
So the same guidance applies to CDAs as you would someone who is already in the VA who is an NCI who is renewing any application. So if they're within a year of their funding, they are eligible. If there's more than a gap of more than a year between where their CDA ends and their application is submitted, then they would have to apply separately for NCI eligibility.
Great, thank you. Next question here. For questions regarding that fit many of the NOCs, list several people, should we email all of them?
Good question. I mean, I guess it doesn't hurt, right? Because sometimes different people are going to have different specific expertises in those lists, and I'm not sure who would always be the most appropriate person to reach out to. But
I would also look at who, which person might be closely affiliated with the scientific review group that you think your proposal will fit.
Yeah, so, that's a good point, Amy.
So that's actually, it comes down to that. I think in terms of all the selections, you know, RFA definitely important, NOC definitely important, but what I think is really key is the scientific review group in terms of your selection.
Thank you. Next question here. So if our station has three PhD scientists who all get eligibility approval, we can submit three applications for BMH?
Yes.
Thank you. Next question here. For small research sites submitting a first-time application, what is recommended for seeking guidance?
Well, I mean, one, get familiar with our documents that tell you how to submit, right? And I know the SF-424 is a ponderous document, but it's actually very detailed in giving step-by-step instructions about how you log into Assist, how you put the application together and how you submit. So that's going to tell you what the process is, where you have to click. The rules are going to be defined in the RFA and the NOC, so get familiar with that. And then I would say, honestly, we try very hard to answer questions in a timely manner. So if you have questions, if you have confusions, email that ISRM review mailbox. And, you know, our goal is to respond within a business day.
That's great. The other thing I would also suggest too is if you are a small site and that site has other investigators have received funding, even not in your particular portfolio area, you may want to reach out to them as well. And also reach out to affiliated centers, even though that center may not be at your particular site, that might be at a larger site, especially in your VISN, and talk to those centers. So I mentioned centers because we have over 50 centers, particularly in health systems research, our centers of innovation, our query centers, Quality Enhancement Research Initiative, and our rehab, RRGT, our Rehab Research and Development and Translation Centers as well. All of them are versed at capacity assessment and really capacity building for, you know, essentially getting investigators more plugged in to doing research that's focused on veteran needs. And you might want to reach out, even if it's not exactly at your site per se, but reach out to a center that may have a particular area that shares your particular area of interest and learn about what current research is going on. Find out and maybe talk to some people who also may be able to help with, if not with the nitty-gritty application process, to give you some general guidance as well.
Great, thank you. Next question here. In a prior session, there was a mention of a $200,000 salary cap via grant funding. For an MD making more than this cap, is it possible to have a clinical portion of this salary exceeding the research cap of $200,000?
Okay, so this is a couple of things going on here. Number one, the $200,000 per year cap on salary for research grants is an NIH policy, not a VA one. VA does not have any specific cap on how much you can get, how much salary you can get off of VA awards. That said, a clinician, in most cases, unless it is a career development award, should not be getting any salary off of the VA award. Their salary should be compensated through VERA dollars in terms of protected time for them to do research on the project. And it's true for CDA awards for clinicians that the salary portion of the award can be much, much larger than the research portion of the award, but that is by design. Largely what we're buying with CDA awards is protected time for the applicant. I don't know, does anybody else want to add anything there?
Sounds like a no. Okay, next question. If a PhD scientist applied previously to merit mechanisms, are we supposed to continue under merit RFA?
No, I mean, you can, if they completed a merit review award and now they want to move on to a clinical trial, that's permitted.
Right, thank you. Next question. So it seems like I won't be able to apply with the spring cycle as the LOI deadline change was rolled out with such short notice. Have you considered the implications for researchers' careers at a time when VA finances are already creating a strain?
Well, for one, if the February 1 is the deadline for most awards for the spring cycle. So unless they're going for a clinical trial, a career development, an RCS, or a translational study, they have not missed the deadline. In terms of like, we've tried very hard, in fact, to advertise these differing deadlines since September when we released the new set of RFAs. So, if you do have individual researchers who are going to be adversely impacted for whatever reason, I mean, you can send the review mailbox an email and see if there's maybe something we can do, but I don't want to promise that we're going to be giving any sort of, you know, blanket waivers. Like I said, we've tried very hard to communicate through multiple ways, through the RFAs, through emails, and through these workshops about these deadlines.
And I would add too, I really, really want to commend what Christy and Tiffin and Mike have all been doing to really get a lot of this information out as quickly as possible. I mean, from the question, you can tell we've been challenged in a number of ways. The financial situation, budget issues have really taken, have been a big challenge for us as well. One thing to maybe think about is that in terms of research career is, again, I cannot emphasize enough to kind of get beyond the model of I'm just part of one service and go and consider other portfolios and look at all the NOCs to see where your research might fit. Because in many respects, a lot of the work that we're trying to really push is more translational. It's going to be more relevant for VA and veteran priorities. And you now have more opportunities to really hone in on particular areas of interest and veteran need. The other thing too is it is pretty amazing. We have now 4 chances a year, although it's, obviously still based, kind of based on the cadences of the SRG's meeting, but we have up to 4 times a year to submit proposals. And that's also something that down the road, as we harmonize, we're looking to maybe make sure that we can provide more agile opportunities for investigators to apply for funding and things like that. Thirdly, and this is something I particularly mentioned primarily to our health services researchers, but I should probably mention to everybody, which is there are other sources of funding in VA that are beyond research that you could consider tapping into. There are the Geriatric Research Education Clinical Center Pilot Awards, the MIRECs. VHA Clinical Operations also provides funding, and they all are very much in need of investigators with scientific expertise to help them. Even though it's technically not considered research, it is still foundational work that could lead to research projects if you're funded through an operational partner. This is something that I've seen done very well and successfully with our health systems researchers, but also increasingly with our clinical and rehabilitation researchers, particularly those who have taken advantage of some of the work like the innovation ecosystem. So our job really is to not only basically curate and provide information about the research funding, but really start expanding and looking around to see if there are other opportunities for you to leverage existing support from other sources like these.
Great, thank you. Next question. Will all SRGs review applications at each deadline? For example, will all BBMH SRGs review CDA2 applications quarterly?
No. So most SRGs, the vast majority, only convene twice a year, either on the spring-fall cycle or in the winter-summer cycle. So you have to look. We have a document on the RFA NOSI website, which gives you the SRG purviews as well as the cycles that they convene. So in most cases, they'll be reviewing CDA applications twice a year.
Great, thank you. We've got a couple questions here on what is the definition of new investigator.
For eligibility, the definition is based on whether or not you've been a PDPI on an ORD research award within the past year. I would also say if people have questions concerning eligibility, I would reach out directly to the MedHealth and BBMH mailboxes, because in this case, it's the portfolios that run those programs.
Great, thank you. Next question here. We heard there were high numbers of pre-applications this round. This has implications for funding. Can you give us any idea of how the budget for funding new applications in the next few cycles looks?
I mean, no one can predict the future. We did have a high number of applications that were submitted for BLRD and CSRD for their last round as a service. I think maybe there was a perception that people just wanted to get them in for that last round while they could. But in the reality, I don't think that, the research pie is the research pie. The number of applications we get is the number of applications we get. So I know Chris just popped on here, so maybe he has some insights he'd want to share.
I mean, I don't have any great insight on this, but I think anybody who looks at the local pay or the national news understands that Congress's funding generally has been flat for the last couple of years and for another year at least, and that includes VA research. So at the same time, we're seeing inflation and research costs, we're not getting more money. So that just means we're going to be able to fund fewer projects. So it's just not a good budget situation right now. So I hope everybody understands that. It's not what we want to hear, but that's the reality of the situation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Next question here. Apologies if I missed it, but where is the full updated info in writing for guidance on submissions? Also, suggest file names be within 50 characters. One of them wasn't. What is the ISRM email to send suggestions to clarify for future?
Okay, well, so our guidance is listed primarily in four different documents. We have the VASF 424. You have the SRG purview document that tells you when SRGs meet and what their purviews are. Then there's the NOSIs and the RFAs. So with those four documents, you should have the instructions you need to submit a research application. There was a mistake in one of our file names suggestions. That will be updated in the next round of RFAs. Our suggestion is to just remove the "and" from that file name, and then it will meet the 50 character limit. If you need to send suggestions about updates to RFAs, I encourage you to use the IRCRM review mailbox.
I think I just put the ISRM mailbox in the chat, Heidi.
Okay,
thank you. Or the Q&A.
Let me find it here so I can get that sent out to everyone. I will find it. Let me find the next question here first. When I ask for more questions, I am now slammed with questions.
Be careful what you ask for.
Exactly. I'm not going to complain. We've still got 20 minutes. We can get through these. Next question here. Prior to this transition, MD clinician PIs who held a BLRD grant were allowed to request a cost extension in the last year of the grant for up to $30,000 as a sort of bridge funding request. For clinician PIs who still hold an existing BLRD grant, are you still accepting these requests?
So unfortunately, that's not a question I can specifically answer, because that would be the... We are accepting PMOs. A PMO could include a cost extension, but what the appetite will be for approving those is not something I can easily answer.
Okay, thank you. Next question here. For pre-applications due tomorrow, what is the deadline for the full application submission?
So if you're submitting a pre-application for the spring round, that would be March 10. If you're submitting a pre-application for the summer round, that would be, is it June 10?
But the question, I'm concerned the question is asking about pre-applications due tomorrow, and there are no pre-applications due tomorrow. Full applications are due tomorrow for the winter cycle.
The next pre-application would be,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no pre-applications would do October 1st and November 1st for the full applications that are due tomorrow. And then our next pre-applications that are due are February 1st, as Mike said.
Great, thank you. Next question here. Can you submit two pre-submissions for the same RFA, one resubmission and one new, in case the resubmission gets funded?
So you're talking about pre-applications?
I think that's what they mean, Mike. Pre-submission, I think they mean pre-application.
So no, you have to choose which one you think is going to have the best chance of funding and submit that one.
Well, earlier you said they could get a waiver.
We could ask for a waiver. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, so I guess then the process would be submit the two, but submit a waiver with them, noting that you're going to try to do two submissions on the same RFA in the same round. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Next question here. I am a non-practicing physician currently restricted to RRND. Does this mean I can apply for any NOCI? Do I still need a waiver to apply for other NOCIs?
So you can apply to any NOCI. Your status as a clinician doesn't affect your ability to apply per se, especially if you're currently funded. It affects your ability to get salary support off of the award. So if you are not licensed or you're no longer licensed, then you can ask for salary support from the award. If you are licensed, even if you're not practicing, then I believe that you cannot get salary off the award.
Great, thank you. Next question here. Who should we email if there is not a program manager listed for an SRG?
Email the review mailbox, and then we'll forward it to the appropriate SPM who's covering that SRG. This is happening in cases where we have, new hires that have not yet been recruited. Yes, we need to recruit new SRGs.
Great, thank you. Next question here. For a CDA applicant who is a clinician plus 15 years and recently completed their PhD, would they be considered, which would be considered the terminal degree? Would their eligibility for the CDA be based on time since completing the PhD?
So they, I believe that they would have to ask for a waiver because there's a two separate rules, and one of them is being 10 years beyond your MD. That said, I would encourage you, the CDA RFA has a CDA mailbox, and I would email them to ask about the possibility of getting a waiver in this situation.
Great, thank you. Sorry, Tiffin's feeding me some links that I'm getting sent out here, so we don't have to handle those questions here. Next question. How many years do merit recipients remain eligible for non-clinician submissions? It used to be 3 years in the past.
Yeah, that's been reduced. So now it is 1 year after your previous award terminates. So you can have a gap of up to 1 year before you need to reapply for eligibility.
Great, thank you. Next question here. Can a PI submit two RD01 PREM RFAs in the same cycle if they respond to independent NOCs?
No. They would have to choose one award that they think has the best chance of, unless they submit a waiver. But I think in the case of two new awards to the same RFA, we would probably be unlikely to grant the waiver, and we would ask them to choose the project that they most believe in.
Great, thank you. Next question here. This is kind of a long one. Give me a minute to get through it. A recent FAQ clarified that PIs can only be compensated for time devoted to the project. They can no longer request salary for VA activities outside of research. For non-clinicians who require a 5/8 appointment, but typically only devote 3/8 to a merit project, what is the expectation for how they will cover salary for the remaining 2/8? Options seem to be having multiple merit awards, acting as paid personnel on another merit award, having an RCS, or having the facility paid to cover the additional 1/8. Challenging in current environment. Are there any other suggested pathways?
The only one I can think of right now off the top of my head is you could also have funding through the nonprofit from the NIH or another granting organization.
And you may also consider opportunities to be funded through a center, meaning that the center may need your methodological expertise, and it's an opportunity for you to be part of it for and to collaborate there as well.
Thank you. Next question here, Vera. Again, for small sites that do not have VERA funding, it is a challenge for our clinicians to apply for VA funding. Is there an exception process?
There is no exception process. I can say that, although my understanding of VERA was it was based on a number of awards to the site, at least partially. So even if you don't get a lot of VERA dollars, you should be getting them based on the size of the research program. Chris?
Yeah, so just the VERA model is the VERA Veterans Equitable Resource Allocation Model, and it is a system that funds your hospital. So every site has VERA funding. You may not have any research VERA funding, but everybody has VERA funding. So I'm not sure what the real question is can you get a startup package for a clinician scientist in a small facility? And that would be up to your facility leadership, whether they wanted to devote some money to that, at least in my experience, or work with an academic affiliate who can provide a startup package for a clinician scientist. Those are my thoughts on that.
Okay, thank you. The next question here. it seems I am not on the email distribution list for these RFA announcements. Would you provide guidance on how to get on this email list?
So I don't know, Christy or Tiffin, do you know how they get onto the AO ACOS mailing list?
So you have to be an AO or an ACOS for those mailing lists, and those are managed through the ART system. They manage the email, those email groups. We also send out to Center and COIN and REAP directors, and we send to the grants manager listserv. So if you are not an AO or ACOS, but a grants manager, then you could send an email to the ERA mailbox or ISRM mailbox, and we'll be glad to forward it to the owner of those of the grants manager email group. Thanks.
The other thing too, especially ACOSs and AOs at each site should be maintaining a list of all their active investigators. If you're a new investigator or if you've recently joined a VA, make sure you go to your local research office and get added to that list so that you get their, they cascade information down from central office to all the local people, all the local investigators in their site.
Thank you. Okay, the next question here. Just got a score and summary statement on a CSR&D merit. Any hint if funding line will be higher than 10%?
That's not something I can know at this point. So I would hope we're a little bit better than 10%, but that's might be optimistic in this environment.
Yeah. That's probably a conversation to have with the portfolio director, and they should be reaching, you know, they should be kind of communicating what their proposed funding line would be eventually.
Thank you. Okay, next question here. Will there be a change to the 4-page reference rule?
No, no, we're not contemplating that at this time.
Thank you. Next question. Can a PhD scientist get a waiver after more than a year of not being funded by the VA?
They would have to be renominated for eligibility by their station and then go through the eligibility process.
Thank you. Next question here. Having additional funding opportunities is fantastic, but those of us who are hired by our local research service need research funds to extend our employment. Our HR policy is going to be revised to accommodate for non-research funds for researchers.
Yeah, since I brought that topic up, I'll try to answer that question. I think it's going to depend. I think that basically we're really looking at ways in which we can incentivize opportunities where research funding can be parallel and matched to non-research funding. So at least, at the very least, there is some research funding to be affiliated that's affiliated with the non-research funding. Again, this has mainly been an area of focus for health systems research and Qwerie, because traditionally Qwerie has been non-research funding. And for health systems research, we have a ton of people who get money from operations. What seems to be working out the best is that you are able to basically have parallel funding in non-research, but really still be anchored in research funding, either through a support, you're supported through a center, you're supported through a consortium of research like a CORE, or you might be supported through other means that avail you of the research funding. And then the non-research funding tends to be used for more flexible reasons, such as reviews preparatory to research, for evaluation work that could inform a clinical trial, and for other ways in which you can support your preliminary studies when you go for a future clinical trial and things like that.
Thank you. Next question. How are you defining clinical training for clinician CDA applicants? The window for completing clinical training, 5 years, is different from the timeline for terminal degree, 10 years, which I believe is a new eligibility criteria.
So the answer to that is the earlier of those two dates. So it's either 5 years beyond your training or 10 years beyond your MD. That said, it's not uncommon for people to submit waivers when they have long fellowships and for those waivers to be approved. So I would encourage you to submit the waivers or reach out to the clinical trials program to ask about, you know, the possibility of a waiver in those situations.
Great, thank you. Next question here. Now that each PI can hold up to three VA merits, for example, can you please give an example scenario, or it's just like having multiple NIH R01s at the same time?
I guess I don't completely understand the question. You can hold multiple merits, and there's a limit of three. So if you have three that you're currently awarded, one, congratulations. And then two, if you went for a fourth, we would say, no, we're not going to fund a fourth without a waiver.
Right. Thank you. Next question here. It appears the timeline to resubmit a CDA proposal has lengthened from the subsequent three cycles to five cycles, but wanted to confirm, please.
Yeah, I believe that is correct.
Great, thank you. Next question. Does funding as a COI count for eligibility?
No.
Thank you. Next question. Will VA be transitioning to the BioSketch and other support common forms next year on the same timeline as NIH?
Most likely, yes, or a very similar timeline.
Thank you. Next question. Are there plans to establish a new RFA specific to the collaborative grant from the days of old?
It's something we're discussing internally, but I can't say that whether we're going to release one or when.
Thank you. Next question. When will ORCID be used?
So I don't know the specific timeline, but we do have a working group working on that, and I think probably early 2025 is when we would be instituting that. Does anybody here have more details?
So the ORCID will be a part of the Common Forms requirements. We have had it as an optional use for PIs in the current ORD SF424, and that will become a requirement on submissions moving forward, just as with NIH. But I'm thinking spring, late spring, along with Common Forms, 2025.
Great, thank you. And that is all of our submitted questions, and it is 1:59. Ooh, that timing worked out really nicely.
Yay.
Just want to check if any of you have any closing remarks you'd like to make as we close the session out.
This is Amy. I just want to thank Mike, Tiffin, Christy, and Chris again for their efforts and their support on this. And hopefully we've answered all of your questions. If you have more, we will gladly answer them offline or maybe do even another cyber seminar at this effect. So really thank you again for your participation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you to our presenters today. We really do appreciate the time that you put into presenting and putting everything together today. We thank you so much. For the audience, when we close the meeting out, you will be prompted with a feedback form. Please take a few moments. We really do appreciate all of your feedback. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's cyber seminar. As I said earlier, we did record today's session. We will be getting that link sent out to everyone on Wednesday. The link for the handouts is in the Q&A. If you have not grabbed that, scroll through there and find there. Just right-click on that link to grab the link. And you can download those handouts right there. But the recording will be available on Wednesday. Thank you for everyone joining us for today's cyber seminar, and we hope to see you at a future session. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much,
Heidi. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you. Bye.